I'm going to talk about automating NetMon. Paul talked, obviously, on Tuesday about NetMon in general, he's covered some of the things that I'm going to cover. I'm going to cover it more from the scripting side rather than talking about NetMon itself, because Paul already talked about that. But I'll talk about scripting, some of the scripting things you can do to automate NetMon itself. And I'm going to be using PowerShell to. I'll be using PowerShell to do that. You can also use other scripting languages like Python, Iron Python, and stuff. We have demos of those, but I'm going to focus strictly on PowerShell. And I've got this working. Woohoo! So what I'm going to do first, because some people don't know too much about PowerShell, is I'm going to spend a bit of time talking about PowerShell, what it is, and some of the features. And then I'm going to, after that, I'm going to drill into the NetMon side of that and how to actually automate it. So the first thing about PowerShell is, like, what is it? And obviously, as you can sort of see from the screenshot, it is, console window. It's command prompt. It isn't command.exe, but it is a replacement for command.exe on Windows. We rebuilt it. We built it to be as interactive as Bash on the Unix, because Unix has great scripting, in command console areas. So we built it to be as interactive and composable as Bash. As programmatic as Perl or Python is in a scripting language. It's based on production, in admins, similar to Bash, would be in KSI. And of course, in this case, it allows really easy access to all the underlying data structures, be it a like SQL Server, for instance, the file system, the registry, certificates, and I'll show a couple of those examples. So the difference between PowerShell and, say, cmd.exe and some of the others is objects. And I'll talk a little bit about this more, but I'm going to give a quick little marketing demo and then talk about what it is. But that's a big difference. So this is an atypical PowerShell command line. So you say git process, and then you have a pipe, which, even in command we had pipe. But in this case, it's a different type of piping. So we send the results out to a filter, which is where this is just the current context, so it's the current object in the pipe tree, where the handles are greater than 500. So basically, it's going to return every process that has over 500 handles, and then it's going to sort them, because it passes those results into the sort stack. It's going to sort them based on the handles, and then it's going to send it to the format, and so now it's going to print out the format in a table format. That's sort of the piping example. And what's going to happen is, so basically, the PowerShell parser is going to kick in, and the pipeline processor is going to kick in. The parser will parse through this, instantiate the four commandlets, and I'll talk about those later in just a bit. But the four commandlets that are used here, git process, where, sort, and format, once those are instantiated, the pipeline processor will kick in, and it's going to take the data from git process and shuttle it through the other objects. And again, I'm like a little marketing demo. It shows how it kind of goes through, and then out comes the results. And so it's not really substantive, since you don't get to see the results in this example, but that's what will happen when you do piping. And each one of these cases, they're actual physical objects. And I'll talk about the type of objects in just a second. So why would we redo command.exe? And I think this sort of kind of outlines a good example of why. So in 2003, you could use VBScript, JScript, some other scripting languages to try to automate Exchange. So here I have an example, where you're trying to get some mailbox statistics. Here's the equivalent call in PowerShell. And as an admin, I'm really liking that. As a dev, I might be liking this, but this is still cleaner. if you want to manage a database in Exchange, this is what you were going to do. Here's the one line. The one line of code you would do. To manage the recipients, versus this. So you can see it's much more productive in terms of the amount of code you have to write and maintain. So it's very much aimed at administrative, like most shells tend to be. So just starting off, how do you learn about it, besides go reading the docs and stuff like that? Built in, just like in command, there's the backslash, question mark. PowerShell itself provides a base functionality called git help. that you can then run against any command, and it will return the help function. You can get the commands, which will PowerShell will tell you everything that's installed on your machine in PowerShell that you can do. And as you add features, adding commandlets, they will respond here as well. Given a command, you can actually tell PowerShell to tell you what it can do. So you can drill down. And then you can actually do the PowerShell providers. So you can extend PowerShell beyond just the commands. You can add additional providers. And a provider would be like a file system, like say the NTFS file system, or SQL Server, or Exchange, or the registry. So you can actually create providers that then those commands interact with. So this kind of sums up why we're doing what we did did PowerShell initially. It's a common parser engine. We're not, rather than having command and everything was a little bit different, and trying to drive standardization through just engineering excellence or best practices, which we're still doing, we also now have a common framework that allows you to expose your code and automation tasks into the command environment for your admins or your users, if admin isn't the exact user base, but into the users. And you can kind of see, so now you get behaviors that are consistent. One of the nice changes is that in most command line apps previously, they defined their formatting, and so everything was a little different, so you did a fair bit of parsing, text parsing, to try to wrap stuff together and present it. PowerShell doesn't. The formatting is defined externally from the data retrievers, so you would return data as an object, and then the formatting ones take care of the actual formatting, which is where you saw format table. And I'll show a couple examples of those. Also, is you can do filtering, and the filtering, and I'll show a couple examples as well. Filtering, you saw the greater than, it can be a SQL statement. So you can actually use, select processes where handles are greater than 500. And that's a legal filter. So you can do fairly complex filtering. So I talked about commandlets, and I showed the little marketing demo. What are they? They're .NET classes, but they're basically classes. They're attributed so that they know, so the PowerShell knows what they are. And I'll show some code examples of that. They provide the ability to prompt if you need to, and then you have to specify it in your class. They support robust error handling. Basically, it's exception-based, not just return code based. So in Windows, in the command shell, the only thing you got short of writing to some kind of a log or somehow passing out some kind of a clever string was a return code, and it was an integer. We really didn't have, you could return some numbers, but you really didn't have complex error handling. Now you can return an entire stack trace with an exception call. If you throw an exception, and it'll walk up the tree. And so from a developer point of view, if you're starting to code these and work with them, you actually know what's going on, and you can actually provide much more robust error data to your users. You can also provide confirmation. Confirmation, there's a common, I won't show it here, but there's actually a common command line that you would override to use. It's called confirm, so you do whatever action, and it will say, are you sure you want to do X, Y, Z? They actually have a couple of other examples that you might want to use, depending on your application, would be what if, where you could actually say, what would happen if I did this? For example, would be like doing a purge, cleaning up of a SQL transaction log. What would happen if I issued this? And it will pretend to do it and then tell you back, well, this is what would occur without actually having done it. And then in some administrative tasks, that makes a lot of sense. In some cases, it doesn't. But you as a coder of the commandlets own what makes sense to implement. And then, again, you basically return the object. So you write the results out into the object. You don't return a return code. So you actually have much more robust control there. This is a commandlet. This is obviously C#. Doesn't have to be C#. It can be any language that can talk to .NET. Can be done this. So obviously you do the automation, which is the class, the namespace that PowerShell implements. This is the attribute I talked about. So we're basically, it's a get attribute. We're saying it's a get commandlet and get process. So this one, basically, we're telling the command is going to be get process. And then just like standard, you know, kind of OOP code, we're overriding the in processing. So there's a base class that we've inherited down from, you know, in this case, the commandlet. And we're overriding in processing. In this case, right, we're running through just a for each loop, you know, with the processor. We're writing out the objects, which means we're passing objects back, not result, just, you know, text results or integer results. And then here we see where we're actually throwing, you know, we're actually throwing up an error. So we're actually sending the error back into PowerShell. And so it will, if it's a pipeline, it'll keep following it through. If there isn't a pipeline, it'll just display out the error. Nothing very complex. So obviously, having created commandlets or whatever, the next thing, of course, is what PowerShell really is about is scripting and, you know, automating tasks. And so the first piece is, you know, you can script with .NET, and because it's built on top of .NET, everything in .NET is exposed directly to it. So you can call any of the namespaces. So here's an example. I'm loading up the Windows form namespace in the assembly. I'm just loading it up nice and simply. And this one, I'm actually setting a variable to, you know, to a new instance of the datetime object and passing it in some values. You know, and again, here's some, you know, here, so now I got the object. I'm returning back the day of the week. You know, is it a day of the week? I'm calling a method. You know, I'm dropping, you know, decrementing it by 30 days. You can also call statics. You know, so in here, it's a, you know, just give me the date and time right now. Now, coding in .NET is nice, but there's other, you know, automation tasks that you need to get to that .NET may or may not expose. PowerShell works natively with WMI as well. There's actually an object, you know, get WMI object that you can call into, and there's a couple of ways that you can interact with it. You can see them here. You can obviously get the namespace. If you know the class name, you can call it directly to get the object. It also supports WMI, the WMI language, natively. So if that's where you spend your time, you can work directly with it. You know, and here's the SQL statement I kind of showed you. You know, so we're going to get Win32 processes, you know, where it's calc.exe, and it, you know, that's SQL. That's not, you know, normal scripting language, but it works because of the filter. Additional support for scripting. If you got COM objects, you can call them. You know, we support for that. So, you know, the file system object, it creates the new instance. You know, so if you have old existing COM objects, you can interact with them. ADO, it's got native support for ADO. So you can talk to any ADO-supported data set. XML, it has native support for XML as well, so you can read and write in and XML files. So in that, all of that stuff was 1.0. In 2.0, we took it a little bit further. And in 2.0, we added a whole bunch more commandlets, some of which are really, really, really interesting to pay attention to, which is one is remoting. Which is now you can say, run this over there. You know, and permissions notwithstanding, if you've got the permissions to run it, it'll run. So you can actually now distribute your scripts and your commands across your, you know, across your server farm or across the network infrastructure. And if you think about scripting something, you know, like servers, you may have multiple of them. Now you can have the script running there and returning data and talking across the network. Additional things, obviously eventing, so you can create an event, a custom, you know, event for that's specific to you. So, you know, rather than an event like a Windows event, you could have, you know, if this behavior occurs, do this, and you can register those events. And in that kind of behavior, obviously, then you're thinking about running stuff in the background to monitor. You know, you want to raise something, so we have background jobs, so you can run a PowerShell script in the background behind everything else to say, you know, monitor this SQL Server process, and when this occurs, notify me, you know, or go do up this update in the background, you know, just constantly run, and you can do that, and so you can have background jobs, and that gets you into like where I was talking about where you can get events. The other events that are fairly interesting is, of course, you can do WMI events. So if you're administering, say, hardware, you can actually, it supports WMI, you can say, if this occurs, you know, a device is added or a device configuration is changed, notify me. And it will then call you and run the script when that occurs. So there's quite a lot of the new stuff in here. And what we added as well in 2.0 is a scripting environment that actually, where you can integrate an environment. So obviously you have up here where you have where you would write your scripts. Down here is a live command PowerShell command environment, so you can type in the commands, see how it works. This is the output. Tune it to the way you want, put it up into the scripts, and you actually have a script environment. This, you know, this isn't the only place you can execute because there is the command shell, but now as a dev, you know, or a command, you know, as a script writer, you actually have a debuggable environment to write it. You can absolutely put in debug breaks. So if you're writing your script, you can say stop here, and then you can iterate through it, and I'll actually show that. And what I'm going to do here in just a second, you know, rather than just talk and show slides, is I'm actually going to do some of this stuff for you because I'm a geek at heart, and I prefer the actual code too. So. So this is the command environment I just talked about. I've just got the script. You've got the active window. So this would be this right here is the output window. This is the input window. Those two are the merge. If you ran PowerShell itself, the console window, those two are merged, interlaced together. They're just separated here, one for the entry, one for the output. And so we get over here. And so some of this stuff, and I'll talk a little bit here. And so I'm just typing in dir, and I know it's small. The one thing we don't do in here is allow font changes yet. So I apologize that it's small. But you can see I just did a dir, and so it's listing the current directory. Dir is pretty standard. Something we've in command we were fairly fixed, but dir directory is actually an alias. This is something Unix has had and the scripts have had for a long time. We have it as well. So you can list all the aliases. You can create your own. There's common ones. You know, so you can see write is write output. Remove directory, remove item, and it tells you the command that it is. So we fully support aliases. And again, create your own. If you're not familiar, or don't like the old DOS ones, that are add your own. And there's there's a large set of common ones, but you can extend your own. So go back to dir. And I talked about piping and some of them. So now I'm just going to do the same thing I did, provide the directory, but I'm going to pump it into a format output and say display it like a table. So now you see a table output of everything. So instead of just the raw dump. Yeah, Sonny. Stream manipulation? Stream. Okay. So the question was, does it have facilities for string manipulation like awk? And yes, it does, actually. Because through .NET, you have a very rich string class. And all of the variables, anything you would do, is actually a .NET type under the covers. And so you can create a string. And .NET supports Perl regex, the Perl 5 compatible regex. So you can do anything you could do at that level. Yes? The question was, would I be correct in assuming that the dir command is actually returning objects that are then formatted and not just the text? And yes, you are. You could actually...
You would want a text process that would pluck out fields out of the objects.
Yeah, and the comment there was then you wouldn't want to process the text. You would actually want to be able to use the objects to pluck out the data. And the answer is yes. What I haven't shown here and you can do is, like in a structured language, you can say for each. So you could say for each object in this directory list, do something. So if I wanted to just print out the name and not do this formatting, you can. I was just showing a really quick one, but yeah, it is very much all objects. And I'll actually show a little example of that later when I'm talking at doing netmon actually. So I mentioned that this is neat. I'm showing you my drive, everybody's great, but I mentioned you could do different providers, and so I'm actually going to show you one real quick. Oops, if I can type. Make sure I spell that. So what I'm typed down in here is dir, HKLM, and if you guys know the Windows registry, you know what that is. You know, local machine software. Right? I don't know that it'll allow me on that, but I just directoried my registry. Right? It's just a directory. Oops. And if you forget the, because it's like a drive, so I got the error because in this case I did cert, but I didn't tell it it's a different provider with the colon, so like a C drive. But, so now I just went through the certs installed on my machine. And I have two cert trees, and I can go drill down inside here and get to the individual certs and all the properties on the certs. There's a number of providers. These are just some of the basic ones. And you can actually list the providers as well. So it's fairly easy. And again, you start to look at this, then iterating over files and moving that into other stuff becomes the same, you know, kind of compact. Yeah, question? So the question was, is there an MP3 provider? And ironically, when I get to the end, there's a vast number of community-provided providers and commandlets. So I don't know specifically if there is an MP3 provider, but it would not surprise me. there are media providers out there. Again, I don't know about specifically MP3, but... Now, I would be remiss in not, you know, showing some of the more common and kind of just, you know, standard stuff that you can do in command and other things. So in this case, you know, I'm just doing a simple math calculation, 2 plus 2, you know, give that an order of precedence, and then multiply the result by five, you know, and it's 20. So nothing particularly fancy, but you can do explicit expressions out and treat it as expressions. And I talked about variables, so likewise, you can do the same thing, setting it to a variable. You know, so now I just set it to a variable. There's no output because I didn't do an output. But I can do the output by just saying, dump the value of the variable. So you can set variables. And again, while this was an implicit variable set, under the covers, it's, you know, it's not like in the old VB days of a variant, right? This is .NET. It is a physically typed object. I could have also said system.int, you know, int or system.long and gotten the specific type and been very concrete and done an explicit set as well. I just didn't. So again, some additional piping. You know, I'll use a variable. And then, because you can pipe more into, because I can't see here, so. Yeah, there's quite a lot of them. When I get done with the demos, and I'm going to actually break it and say it here real quick too, is there is actually, in terms of like, you know, cross-platform and support, like PowerShell runs on Windows, but there is an open source project called Pash, which is an open source implementation of PowerShell that runs on a number of other platforms, and it sits on top of Mono, which is, of course, the ECMA, an ECMA implementation of .NET. So there's other options as well. So in this case, what I'm doing is, you know, I created a variable, I'm just doing a directory, I'm sorting it by the last write time in a descending order, and I'm piping them together, but it's just a variable. You know, so I just pumped it in, and then if you see the, you know, so now I'm just going to print it out, so there you go, and if you look at the dates, they're actually going to be in descending order, and you can sort of see them counting down, nothing special. But I can do this, and this is why I did this, which is because they're objects. Oops. Get back there. There we go. So what I'm doing here is that variable I created, I'm calling get type, which is a method on it. And it'll tell you what the type is. So now what I just returned was an object array, a system array. So when you do that variable is an array of objects in this case. And if I had explicitly typed it to string, it would have been a string array. So you can actually do anything, any of the data type manipulation you would do in .NET, you know, and other constructed languages here as well. And I'll show you the for each here real quick, right? So, okay, so, and this will pop up here and be a little bit more visible, but basically, for the variable x, I'm doing for each, and a dollar sign underscore is the current pipeline object, so it's just going to cycle through. It's just a shortcut to, you know, me, this, you know, kind of just the current object, and then I'm going to do the name. So, and so then see where you get in here, you know, for each, where it's unexpected, because in this case, right, where it's looking for the pipe, which I forgot, and so I just... where I didn't assign it and didn't pipe it, so, which of course I could have put that in a variable and there we go. So now you just see the name, because each of those was an object. I said I really only want to see the names of the dir. So you can actually do a lot more formatting than trying to do string, you know, like having to use awk and just to get a name. So, and again, I showed like that was an array. You can actually, oops. You can actually set arrays, so. Got that right? Yeah. So nothing particularly exciting there, but now I can actually interact with the A. So I'm printing, in this case, I just set it, you know, to some values. Now I'm going to print out the fourth element of the array or work with it, so minus E. So you can actually create arrays. And then I talked about the git process where you can actually see what's going on in your machine. So it's pretty easy. You just go git process. There's all the processes running on my machine. Nothing particularly fancy there. But of course, you know, this is, you know, a lot, and there's a lot of data. You may want to filter it. So you can actually do filtering, and also I'll show you some filtering here real quick. And so what I'm doing here, you know, is obviously git process, you know, but now I'm doing where the object, and it's where is an alias for it. I just typed it out. The handles are greater than 250. And if any of these have over 250 handles, now they'll show up. I don't always have that, so we may, it may, oops, did I miss something? Must have. Ah, yes. Thank you. Good catch. No, that should be right. What did I miss? Where did I miss there? The dot handle. Dot handles, less than. Oh, yeah, thank you. There we go. So there's the ones that are greater than 250. All right, so you can filter down. And any of these particular processes have more properties that are necessarily shown, and you can get all the properties. I could have filtered on any of them, sorted on any of them. So that's working with processes. You can actually call kill process. So you can actually get a process and then kill it. I'm not going to show that, but you could do that. One I'm going to show you that's kind of neat is this one, too, and I mentioned it. If I typed that correctly, which I think I did. So what I'm doing here is git event log. So I'm actually going to go query the Windows event log. I'm querying the application event log. You could do system, again, depending on permissions, the context of the script. And I'm going to check where the source of that particular object is the Windows event report, error reporting. So now, but basically, assuming I have any, if Windows reported an error somewhere along the way and sent it back up to Microsoft, you know, have an entry, this will report it. As terms of administration, you could actually check your own event log for information. So, you know, if you're like in SQL, notify me when the transaction log is 50% full. you could go check when those occur. And so it's going to go list the, so there's a couple, right? And it, I just printed them out, but it, you know, the information, it's error reporting, it's a fault bucket, and you could drill in and get the actual messages and stuff. This is actually kind of neat for testing. You can actually automate the test report. If you actually create events entries, you can then actually automatically pull them out as well. So what I'm going to do real quick here. The question was, is there a mechanism for storing objects in files? And the answer is yes. There is actually a write command that simplifies that, but also like through just the command interfaces through .NET or the other languages, you can do streams to write them out to the network, you know, to a network place, web services. So it's very fairly substantial. You have a couple options there. But there's a built-in one to just pipe it out to a file. So, good. So what I'm going to show you here is some scripting real quick. So, and I'll go through it. In this case, again, it's really, really simple. I've got a variable that I'm doing the direct. I'm sorting it on the property of the last time writing. You know, I did this before. Nothing big. Gonna, you know, print out the string, get the type for each of them. Then I'm gonna print out the name. All of this you saw. I typed it interactively. Now it's in the line. And what I'm gonna show you is it's actually going to fail because of security. So the first thing for security contexts, it's like here I can run it, you know, and it'll work fine. You know, so it'll basically go do it because you're running in the context, and because the script hasn't been saved, so I'm not executing scripts. But the default behavior of PowerShell is to not allow scripts to run. You have to sign them. And this one obviously isn't signed. So PowerShell, it, besides being in a managed environment, which you know Java and .NET kind of give you the benefit of having some additional layers of protection, PowerShell is built on top of that and takes the extra protection that scripts have to be signed to be run unless you change the policy, which I will do so you can see it here in just a second. So, because I can't debug otherwise. So what I'm going to do here is I'll save this script real quick. Yes. Okay. Sorry about that. As you saw, I basically interrupted and then stepped through. I'll actually set the security down back to normal real quick here so you can see what the error looks like. And it's very informative. It says scripts are not allowed to run interactively unless you set the permission. So what I have down here is set execution policy unrestricted, which I said a little earlier. Generally not good behavior, but I'm a dev, so I can do this. There's different layers in there that you would do. The default, again, is that the script has to be signed. And so I'm going to change that to default. And actually, I'll make sure I get it right. I'll actually show you the Git help facility real quick. So in this case, like I said, Git help is built in. What that does is that git help, which is a command, will then call the set execution layer, commandlet, and say, this person wants to know how to use you, display yourself. And so then you'll see the output for how to display you. And you see the values. You know, so you can see set execution policy, unrestricted, which is what I did, remote signed, all signed, which means all scripts have to be signed to run, default. Default is restricted. Those are the same. Basically, what that means is that the scripts have to be signed to run locally, and no remote scripts are allowed to run at all. It's not the most restrictive, but it's very close to the most restrictive. And again, here you see confirm, what if. So you can say, well, what if I set restricted, what would happen? And it will tell you. And I'm just going to put go to the default here real quick and then rerun the script. In case sometimes matters. There we go. So now I've set it to default. So now in theory, if I run this, it should actually tell me, because I'm not signed, it should tell me I can't. Yeah. So basically, it can't do it because the script is disabled because it's not signed. So that's the default behavior you'll see on when you use a script file. The other thing I should note is that the PS1 and PS2 extensions, you can double-click them. They will open in Notepad. They will never run into PowerShell. So you can't accidentally run scripts either. And again, the signing double checks that. So they don't have a default execute behavior. They have a default open behavior. So instead of like an exe where double clicking it executes it, this behavior is reversed. So it's actually fairly secure. And it's that extra little protection. You have to physically type in the script to execute the script. Question in the back. It's all based on permissions. If you don't have permissions, you can't. Oh, the question was, I suppose you could go into the HKEY classes root and scribble that around. And the correct answer is, it entirely depends on permissions. If the current executing context does not have permissions to do that, it will fail. If it does, then yeah. I mean, you could actually set stuff. Although, browsing through it and setting it are two different commands. So,
you gotta, so is there a way to package up a PS1 so that it will behave like
there isn't a way to sign it that way and execute it, but you can actually set up you can set up a profile for PowerShell to allow it to start a certain script. So the short answer is yes, but not in the sense of like an exe. There's a profile that you would create, which is also an XML file and a descriptor for PowerShell, and then you would execute the profile.
Seems like kind of a bug. You can't write a PowerShell script that then behaves like an application.
Yeah, it's by design in the context. Oops. The statement was, it seems like it's a design flaw that you can't run it. It's actually by choice for security, and that we've chosen not to allow the scripts to be easily executable. The PowerShell profiles are the way around that, so you can configure them. And also with PowerShell, you can handle sort of the startup, so you can say which scripts are allowed to run on startup of PowerShell and which ones are enabled, and that's the way you would do that. So you could control the context in which they start up. That would be the way to do that. So that's a, oops. Let me get rid of you. Get my mouse back here. If I can get my, there we go. Okay, there we go. And back over here. All right. So now I'm kind of showed you some PowerShell stuff that's kind of fun. I'm actually going to show you NetMon automation using PowerShell. Obviously, now, Paul talked about a nmcap, nice command line interface into NetMon. Great way to do stuff. This is just a recap of what he said. And keynote there, it's scriptable, and I'm going to show that. Really kind of a neat way to do it. And so I'm going to use it using PowerShell. And rather than talk about it, I'm going to show it, because there's really not a whole lot to talk about beyond nmcap and how much you can actually interact with it. So I'm actually going to show it. So first thing I'm going to do is clear that. And actually I'm going to give myself the ability to run scripts again. So the first thing I want to do here is I'm just going to do something really simple, and I'm just going to, first I'm going to go to the netmon directory. And as you can see, we have tab completion. So there we go. Now this is the first thing I'm just going to do real quick is just to show that it is command, so you can run any console app. In this case, it's nmcap. Paul kind of showed it. And this is a feature of nmcap where you can actually have it iterate through the available network adapters. Display. Did I miss it? Display. Thank you. Yeah, that would be bad. There we go. And so it just lists out the available network adapters on my machine that Netmon can interact with. Nice and simple. Now the script, you'll notice the script, I'm not actually using nmcap. I got a variable called network. I'm using WMI. And I'm going to go get the installed configurations. I'm filtering it based on my wireless adapter. Another adapter is you can filter on IP enabled. Basically any of the properties of WMI you can go get. I'm filtering for a specific one that I'm interested in, which again isn't, it is one of these. It's this one right here, but it isn't using Netmon to go get it. And then I'm going to call nmcap. I'm telling it, for the network, go get the description because it's a WMI object, so I've got all the properties. And I'm saying, well, get me the description for it. Use that as the network adapter to bind to. And then capture it. I'm going to capture the TCP packets, pump it out to the file, which is just a capture on my desktop, and then I'm going to terminate in 20 seconds. So this is a really simple script, nothing very complex about this at all. But you see where I'm actually using multiple pieces from PowerShell to do it. And this will take 20 seconds. Maybe should have shortened that to 10, but. What was that, Bill? Yeah, so there you go. Now did it, Netmon ran, did the capturing, let you know that it actually it deserialized itself and released its connection to the network adapter and saved it up. So very straightforward, just bound to it. Of course, that in of itself wouldn't be nearly as interesting if we couldn't actually go see this stuff. So I'm going to bring that over here, and then what I'm going to do is go open that file. And if I did it right, it should be there. Right? Or not? Ah. Okay, it didn't do it for some reason. What did I miss? No, that's my actually account name. So. Yeah, there. Normally, let me go find out what I did, since I did something here. It would. How interesting. Yeah, so. No traffic, yeah, so there's no file. So, let me fix that. Thank you, guys. Let me fix that. That's what I like to do about this. I can do asterisk. If it's at all, I can't remember for you guys. It's at star, yeah. Yeah. Although if I had done longer, it would actually worked. Okay, so star doesn't work. So, trying to think of what I can do here. Yeah, that's what I want. No, just leave capture? Just capture? Okay. I normally don't capture everything, so. I'm usually more concrete than that, like TCP or HTTP, so. All right, so if we did this. There we go. So we spit out lots of packets that time. All right. So I don't think backwards. So here we go. Then we should be able to open it. And then capture. And then as Paul, you know, demoed Netmon before, you'll actually see all the things that came across all of the stuff now. You know, on my network wireless adapter. So you can capture it. I was actually trying to filter it to a smaller set. But and again, because NMCapture actually allows you to do filter, so like now that I have the file, I could actually then filter it as well before I displayed it and resave it as a file. So I can do stuff offline. But you can actually then see and drill into your traffic. Question, yeah?
So can you take a capture file and somehow turn it into PowerShell objects?
Currently, the answer to that is yes, very difficultly. there is, because you can get the data back and parse